All right, we're going to start on the top of Kufu Daud Omen Aleph. We'll start from the second line. Over there it says, Yibayolahu. Mahu shisadru b'bal chof. So Gemara wants to know, we have for certain a limud by Erechin that there is a need or an obligation to ensure the individual who cannot afford to pay for that which he promised. For instance, there the Erech that he's offered to pay to the Mikdash. He doesn't have sufficient monies to pay for it. Over there, there's an obligation to ensure that he has what to live with afterwards. We have to leave him with items. So the question is, by Baal Chof, what's the din by Baal Chof? Migamar, right, Micha, Micha, Me'erachin. Do we learn out from the word mach, which means, you know, if a person is poor or unable to pay, the word mach is used both by Baal Chof and by Erachin. Do we say there's a, right, Gezer Shover, Hekesh, Me'erachin? Although, or maybe not. Tashma, the Shalach Ravin Bigarte, Davrazish Shalti the Chol Rabutai. He sent in his letter that this is an item that I asked all of my Rebbeim. V'lam Ruli Davar, they didn't tell me anything. Baram, Kachayta Sheila. But on the other hand, we did have such a question in the Beit Midrash, and from this we can learn out the answer. Homer, Harei Alai Maneh LeBedek Abayit. Someone here who promises some sort of item to Hekdesh. So this is as opposed to Erechin, right, where there's a formulation, a fixed formula, both for what you say and what you give. Here is a person who just makes a donation to the Hekdesh. Mahu, shisaju. Now, but the donation that he made is in excess of what he owns. And what's the din there? Are we misadar from him or not? So Rabbi Yaakov, Mishmei de bar pado, Rabbi Yirmiyah Mishmei de ilfa amrei kavachomer b'balchov. Let us learn out from balchov. Ma balchov shemachzirin ve'ein mesadrin. So what about balchov, where there's an obligation on the malveh to return the mashkon every day or every night, depending on the situation. But there, ein mesadrin. We do not provide for his livelihood, meaning that we take everything. Hekdesh. She'ein machzirin, ein odin she'ein misadrin. But Hekdesh, where there's no obligation to return the mashkon, then certainly there's going to be no obligation to provide for him. So the underlying assumption in their limud over here is clearly that by Baal Chov, there is no misadrin, and therefore by Hekdesh, we should learn a misadrin. So even though they're not directly answering the question that we have, nevertheless, they are, in a sense, addressing the issue, which is that there is no misadrin by Baal Chov. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, neder be'erkecha k'tiv. By erkecha, the word neder appears. And since the word neder, which is really a term that's used for donations or promises to Hekdesh, right, not erechin, so therefore he says there is a hekesh between erechin and nedorim, or a hekesh between erechin and other Hekdesh, my erechin misadrin. Af Hekdesh Misadrin, just like by Erechin, we ensure that he has what to live with afterwards. We leave him the basic necessities afterwards. So too by Hekdesh, we're going to leave him the basic necessities. Ve'idach, the other, the mudim, the others over here, meaning Rav Yaakov and Rabbi Yirmiyah, what are they going to do with, what do they do with this pasuk or this Hekesh of Nedarim and Erkecha? It says, Ha'od nidon b'chvodo hu da'ato. This is coming to teach us about l'chvodo. L'chvodo is about evarim, meaning limbs, and the din of limbs. What are the din of limbs? Well, there are two types of limbs. There's the limb she'en ha'neshama tluya ba, and there's a limb she'en ha'neshama tluya ba. I mean, there's a limb that is a right an essential a life limb, and therefore if it was removed, the person would chas v'shalom pass away. And then there's a limb which is not necessarily life-threatening. I mean, the person could lose such a limb, chas v'shalom, and still be alive and functioning. So the question is, when it comes to certain limbs, what do we do? If a person says erech of a limb on that he takes on himself, or he says, gives a neder of a limb. So Gemara says, well, we have a limut, as Rashi says, by erechin kol nefashot. The word nefashot over there teaches us that any limb that is life, right, threatening, if you remove it, then that limb is as if you promised your whole body. It's a promise to everything. I mean, since that limb, your whole body is tuliyah on that limb, and therefore once you've mentioned that limb, it's as if you said your whole self. So it says, Marachin Nidon Bechvodo, Afekdesh Nidon Bechvodo. So that's what they use this Hekesh for, to teach us that the same din applies to regular Hekdesh, not just the Erechin. Just like by Erechin, if you mention a limb that is life is dependent on, so too by Hekdesh, if you mention a limb that life is dependent on, just like by Erechin, you will have it be meaning his whole entire body or his whole self. So to be Hekdesh, it'll mean the entirety of his body or entirety of himself, and therefore he'll have to give the amount or value of himself as opposed to simply the value of that particular limb. The Gemara says now, Visadru b'bachov kavachomer merachin. So this is the first question. The second question shall come up in a second, and that is your question. So Gemara says, let's learn from a kavachom ferachin that you should also have to misader. You have to provide bare necessities to the individual. Umayrachin she'ein machzirin misadrin. Just like by erachin that you aren't machzir, you are misader. Bachov she'machzirin and udin she'misadrin. Bachov where you are machzir, certainly you should be misader. I mean, you certainly should have to give him his bare necessities. Amar kra, the pasuk says, Vimachhu me'erkecha. Who, v'lo b'chov, who is a mute. So this idea of providing or providing the bare necessity is unique to erchin and nowhere else, not to a b'chov. V'idach. So the idach here is unclear who the idach is. Rashi claims the idach is our Mishnah. The idach over here is our Mishnah, who says that you actually are misader by a b'chov. As opposed to over here, the Gemara's limud is that there's a limud from the pasuk that you're not misader b'bachov. Our Mishnah says you are misader b'bachov. So that's who the idach is over here. The Rabbeinu Tam, we're going to see in a second, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that our Mishnah paskins that there isn't a need for misadrin b'bachov. So therefore, he has to explain the idach, right, as being something else, or some person who asked the question, or the person who thinks a braisa that, you know, earlier on that suggests that you are misader. So Rashi says it's our Mishnah. The Rabbeinu Tam, we're going to see in a second, who thinks our Mishnah doesn't say misadrin. Therefore, he thinks he has to find some other, either the questioner here or other braisa that says that we are misadrin. So what are they going to do with that pasuk? Umachu me'erkecha. Hai ad shehei b'machuto mitchilato ad sofo. That comes to teach us. Umachu me'erkecha means that he has to be poor from the time that he takes the neder, or the time that he promises the erchin, all the way until the time that the Kohen assesses him. It can't be where he was poor, he got rich, and then he got poor again, or, you know, any other combination. It means that he has to be poor throughout the whole period of time. So Gemara says, and this, I think, Shoal, was your question. V'achziru b'akdesh kavachomei b'achov. Right? Who says, right, that b'achov, I mean, why? The underlying assumption of the Gemara is that you're chozer by b'achov, and you're not chozer by hekdesh. Why not say that you're chozer b'hekdesh? Because hekdesh is always more chomer than b'chov. Umal b'chov she'im misadrin machzirin. By b'chov, where you do not provide the bare necessities, we force a chazara. Hekdesh misadrin. By hekdesh, where we do provide the bare necessities, according to that limud, the hekdesh we had above, enu din she'machzirin, or according to Rabbi Yochanan. So certainly there we should have to return it. So v'amar kra v'shachav v'sam lato uveirachecha. So this is somewhat, so I think the answer is along the lines of what you were asking, which is Yotze Hekdesh, Shein Tzarich Bracha. Hekdesh doesn't need a bracha. Meaning that if the whole purpose of returning the item to the individual so that he'll get a benefit and give you a bracha, Hekdesh doesn't need a bracha. Tumar says, Velo, since when doesn't Hekdesh need a bracha? I mean, I don't know, here it doesn't mean Hekdesh. Hekdesh here, I think, is seen as a representing a Kodesh Baruch Hu, v'ativ, from the next question, it seems that way, v'chalta v'savato v'rachta, right, that you have to give, we do give a bracha to Hashem, we are mevarech Hashem. So, ela amakra ulechati et tzedakah, mi shetzarich tzedakah, right, that, what does it mean, when you give back the avot, when you give back the mashkon, that'll be for you at tzedakah. Who needs tzedakah? Right, that's only applicable to people who need staka, who need help, or need that type of right mitzvot to accrue to them. But that's not true of Hekdesh. Hekdesh doesn't need that. So the Gemara in the end, I think, is saying exactly what you were saying, that maybe the differential here of machzirin or has to do with the fact that it is Hekdesh, right? And then since it is Hekdesh, there is no need for machzirin. Now, Ashkechei Rabba Baravu al Eliyahu. So Rabba Baravu found Eliyahu, Dekoi Beveit Kvarot Shel Ovdei Kochavim. He was standing in a non-Jewish graveyard. So I'm like, you know, if you met Eliyahu in the non-Jewish graveyard, what would you ask him? So he says, Mau shisadru b'bauchov. What's the din? We'll read the girsa that we have in front of us. Right, again, the Rabbeinu Tam changes the girsa, but based on the girsa we have in front of us, is what is the din about providing the bare necessities to b'bauchov? Amalei, gomar micha micha me'erachin. We learn that Gzeres Shavar from Erechin of Mach, that's mentioned by both of them. Since it's mentioned by both of them, the head case, just by Erechin, there's a necessity, or you're obligated to provide the bare necessities before you take away, when you take away his possession. So, Tuba and Bachov. So it says, Gabi Erechin Tevi Machu Me'erkecha, and Gabi Bachov Tevi Chiyamu Chachicha. So since the word Mach is used, or the verb, you know, the, word mach is used in both instances, we have such a hekesh between them, or some sort of gzera shava between them that tells us that we're going to apply the dinim of Erechin to Balchov, and therefore we're going to say, just like by Erechin there, we leave in the bare necessities when we take away the monies for hekdesh, so to over by Balchov, when we take the mashkon, or we take away to pay for the chov, we will leave him with the bare necessities. Now, Minayin la'arum shelo yitrom. That's the second question he asked him. How do you know someone who is not dressed, or someone who is naked, cannot take off truma? So truthfully, the question is really not whether you can take truma or not. The question really is, can you be mevarech? Are you allowed to make a bracha when you are not dressed? So he says, how do you know that you can't make a bracha? So because the problem of taking truma off when you're not dressed is because you have to make a bracha. And because you have to make a bracha, and we're going to see this right now, he's asking him is, how do you know that that's problematic? The reason he asked in this manner is he's quoting the Lashon HaMishnah, which says that a person can't be Torei Marum. But the real question is, why not? Because of the bracha. And dechtiv lo yireh b'cha ervat davar. So the way we learn that is, Rashi learns, b'sha'ash atamad ber bo. Right, whenever you're speaking to, about him or to him, lo yirabachay da ervat davar. You should not be right erva. So when you're speaking to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you shouldn't be with erva. Shma mina ein adam avreich shuarum. Right, so therefore we see the person can't make a bracha when he is undressed. So that's the case. You can't be mafrish truma when you're undressed because you'll need to make a bracha. So now this question: Amalei lav kohen humar. So Rabbi Baravua says to him, listen, Eliyahu, aren't you a Kohen? My time a Kai Mar Bebeta Kvarot. What are you doing in the cemetery? Meaning that if you're a Kohen, what are you doing hanging out in the cemetery over here? So first of all, it's clear that this isn't, that Eliyahu, this whole idea that Eliyahu is a Kohen is not clear. The Gemara has different opinions, or we see different things in the Midrash especially. We have different opinions with regards to this. Rashi quotes the Midrash over here that Eliyahu was Pinchas, and that's because of the Lashon of Kano Kineti that's used by both of them, a Kano et Kinati that's used by both Eliyahu and Pinchas. So therefore, there's some Chazal Midrash that connects Eliyahu and Pinchas, but there are other Midrashim that indicate otherwise. But it's clear here from the Gemara is learning that along those lines that Eliyahu was a Kohen. So he says, if you're a Kohen, what are you doing hanging out in the Beit HaKvarot of the non-Jews? So the answer is obvious. So what does Eliyahu say back to him? Amalei lo matni mar taros? And we imagine asking Eliyahu something. He says, what happened? You didn't learn taros? So Tatanya, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, we have a brace of Rabbi Shimon Yochai Omer, Kivrehem, shel ovdei kochavim, ein mitamim. We know that the graves of ovdei kochavim are not mitamei. Over here it means, are not mitamei, but ohel. It's not. They are mitamei, but maga. But here they're not mitamei, but ohel. Shenemer. Vaten tzoni tzon mariti adam atem. Atem koim adam, venov de chavim koim adam. This is the limud that you are called adam and not, right, of de chavim. And by tumat ohel, right, it says, zota Torah adam ki amut bo ohel. So only an adam ki amut bo ohel is mitame bo ohel. But over here we don't have what? Adam is defined. What is the definition of the word adam? The definition of adam is you and not an of de chavim. So that's really how Eliyahu says back to him, what happened? You didn't learn Taros? You don't know this basic din of the Braisa of Reb Shimon bar Yochai? That Tumat Ohel does not apply to Ovdei Kochavim? Now, Tosos limits the damage over here and says that truthfully, he did know the Mishnayot in Tarot, but this was simply limited. He didn't know the Tosefta and the Braitot. I mean, he didn't know that much. Now, why? He's going to answer him. Say, Amalei, Arba Arba Lo Matzina B'Shita Matzina. He says, listen, I only learned the four Sidrei Mishnah, or basically the four areas of halacha that are relevant today, right? But I don't learn the six. Why? Because I live in Chutz La'aretz, and it's now after the Churban. So he says that I don't learn Taros, which aren't relevant anymore, and I don't learn Zraim because I'm in Chutz La'aretz. Now he does learn Kodshim because of the general, you know, Shambo Parim Svatenu, that we know that when you learn Kodshim, it's as if you were Makriv. So he did learn Kodshim. So he didn't know Taros. He's basically saying to him, I don't know Taros. So that's why you want to know why I don't know this Brice of Rav Shimon Yochai is because I didn't learn Taros. And again, that's where on where Tosfos says his position, that this isn't, he simply didn't know the Tosefta. He did learn the Sisha Shidrei Mishnah. He knew Taros, but he just didn't know the extensively or the details of Taros. Exactly. So Barba Lo Matzina B'Shita Matzina says, listen, the four already enough trouble for me. The six you want me to get to? So, really, am I? He says, why not? Why aren't you learning the other two storim? I mean, who gives you permission to let it go? So he says, I'm really dechikali milsa. He says, listen, I'm very poor. He says, it's very hard for me. He says, I don't get a stipend from the government, and therefore, I'm struggling over here. So, dabre v'aila l'gan eden. Eliyahu takes him up to Gan Eden. Grabs him, takes him up to Gan Eden. He says, take off your coat or your cloak. Safi, he goes, collect shokol mehani tarfe. So he says, you know, lay it out and then collect some of these leaves and put them into your cloak. Safa shakol, he, you know, put all these leaves into his cloak and he was about to leave. He wrapped them up, he's about to leave. Gavanofik shama de kamar. As he's about to leave, he heard, man ka achu la'alme karabar baravua. So he says, who's eating up all Zolam Abba? Like Rabbi Baravua. So you heard that on your way out. What would you do? All right. So he did that. Nafatz Shadinhu. He opened it up and shook him out. So, because he wasn't going to walk away and take all of Zolam Abba, so he wasn't willing to do it. So, Afilu Hachi, Aitia Leglime. Nevertheless, even though he shook them all out, nevertheless, the cloak that he was wearing in his coat absorbed the smell from the leaves. And Sachat Glima Recha. And it gave off its aroma or fragrance, right? And therefore, he was able to sell it Zavne Betresar Alfe Dinore. He was able to sell it for 12,000 dinarim, meaning that he was able to make a profit off or a large profit off of this cloak, which I assume was the should have been an impetus for him to help him now learn the other two starim that he had neglected. And Poginu Lachat Namvute. And then he went ahead and he divided it amongst his son-in-laws. And not only did he take some for whatever was enough for himself, but he was generous and gave it also out to his son-in-laws. All right, now. He didn't want to get any benefit. Very nice, very nice. Very nice, and that's what the Marsha says. Very nice. The Marsha says that he didn't want to get a benefit. He didn't want to get a benefit from anything from the Olam Abba, so he gave it to other people. Very nice. So now here we come back. If you just turn back, there's a Rabbeinu Tam here. It's a very important Rabbeinu Tam on the bottom. It's the bottom Tosfos on the Amud Aleph. So Rabbeinu Tam says over here, it says in the bottom Tosfos, Pasuk Rabbeinu Tam b'sefer yashar de'emes sadrim b'balchov. Rabbeinu Tam concludes that we do not Misader b'bachol. We do not provide the bare necessities when it comes to a b'bachol. Now, automatic v'kaimelon, how does he know this? Why do we pass in this way? Because of our Mishnah. He says in our Mishnah, kaimelon halacha k'rib Shimon Gamliel, but Mishnah tenu. Right? That halacha is always like Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah. Hechad lo pasuk gemara k'man de poligale. As long as the gemara doesn't pass in directly against him, then halacha is like him. He says, v'lo matzina b'chol amarim, d'shmaitado shum amora d'sar behedjish misadrin. So there's no amora explicitly who says that you are misader for a bachov. Well, now, I mean, we just read a story about, I guess, Eliyahu Anavi, who says you are misader for a bachov. So what do you mean there's nobody who objects to this position? Right? That's a little bit strange. So let's listen to the next line. V'rabba baravua, d'amale l'ayom, ma'u shisadju the bachov, v'amale gomar micha micha me'arachin, Nir Rabbeinu Tam says, I said to you before that we read it, the Gersa that's found in our Gemara. Rabbeinu Tam says the Gersa should be Minayin, Shemisadrin the Kabachov. It's not Mahu, but rather Minayin. Not is the din this way, but rather where is this din from? Klomer, Minole the Mandidle Misadrin. Where does the one who learns Misadrin, where does he learn it from? And then he says the Bahag also is Goris this way. And then he goes on to say that Not only does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel say Ein Misadrin, he says even the Rabbanon of our Mishnah say Ein Misadrin. Because it really depends on what you're taking. He says, this is actually on the top of the Amud Bet, Tosa says this. Why is that? How come the Rabbanon over there say that you can't? Because Myri Babadli told Baturat Mashkon. When he comes to take it as a Mashkon, the Rabbanon Savish Machzirin Lo Koyume Chayav, that you give it back to him the rest of his life. You have to keep returning the rest of his life. It's a limit. There's a cap, only 30 days. Avahecha the Nato Baturat Gvia, when he takes an object in order to collect, Yachol the Machro Miyad, Velo Yisadju Klau. He can take it right away, sell it, and he has to leave him nothing. And even the Rabbanan would agree to this. That's what Rabbeinu Tam says. And then he says, even if you leave the Girsar our way, which is that it's Mahu, what is the din? He says, Eliyahu was dochehim. Eliyahu was just pushing him off. Because if the din was that you should be Misadrin, then Eliyahu should have answered him that. He asked the question. The question he asked is, what is the din? Are we Misadar for Bachob? What's Eliyahu's answer? Well, his answer is a limud. He didn't answer a misajin lebachov. No, he says to him, micha, micha, merachin. So Rabbeinu Tam, he was just dochehim. That he didn't answer him straight. He just gave him. He said, if you want to, this is the limud that people use. But that's not the locha necessarily. And he says this. Yeah. Right. I would agree with you. Right, I agree. And then he asks the question, and then the Ketosis discusses the last part of the question as well. If Eliyahu and Navi is a Kohen, right, first of all, we see him before. He showed up at the burial of Rabbi Akiva. We actually learned that before, right? And then they asked him, what is he doing there? And they said, Ketzadikim ain't mitamim. He says, Tzadikim are not mitame. And he said, Tosa says that wasn't a real answer either. He was doing the same thing. He was being dochehim. Why was he really by the kvura of Rabbi Akiva? He says, because he was Aruge Malchus. He was killed by the government, and people were too scared to deal with it because they were afraid of the Malchus. So therefore, it became a Mace Mitzvah, and that's why Eliyahu was over there. It's very interesting. So Tosa is going on to say that Eliyahu does this in other places. I'm sorry? Right. It was a Mace Mitzvah. So he says that Eliyahu does this, that he's doche, even though he doesn't say the real answer of why he's there, he just says doche by saying some other din. And the final thing he asks is, if Eliyahu Navi is really a Kohen, how is he revive, or how did he bring back to life the son? I mean, he was dead. So how could it be that he's going to come over back over here and bring back to life? Teima Luri, Heach Hechia Bina Shel Halamana. How did Eliyahu bring back to life the son of the widow, Kevin Shekoenaya? Right, so it says, right, that he brought him back to life. Lamar, listen to his answer, Shaya Barur Lo Shechayehu. He knew for sure that he'd be able to bring him back to life. Kachaya Mutar Mishum Pikuach Nefesh. Because of Pikuach Nefesh, you're allowed to violate any mitzvah in the Torah. So even for regular, even though by a regular Kohen, it would be considered beyond the pale, and therefore not Pikuach Nefesh. Nevertheless, Eliyahu, who knew for sure that he was able to bring him back to life, that would have been in the classification of Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore he was able to deal with the situation and bring this child back to life. It's very interesting. And the Imesh Anihu, Lotishka Ba'avuto, that if he's a poor person, you shouldn't sleep with the mashkon that you've taken from him. Mar says, well, based on that, we're going to say, Ha Ashir Shchiv? If he is a rich person, you should sleep with his avot. So what's the problem? The problem with that is that it'd be ribis. You're not allowed to use the avot. Even if he's a rich guy, maybe you can keep it by you, but you can't sleep with it because then you're using his item. That's ribis. So my kamar, so what's going on here? So Amar Rav Sheshes Haki Kamar. Ve'imanish anihu lo tishkav v'avoto etzlecha. Not to sleep with the avot, but rather, if he's a poor person, don't go to sleep, and his mashkon is still with you. You got to return it to him. Ha'ashir, if he's rich, shchiv, right, with avoto etzlecha, you can go to sleep, and his avot can be in your possession, because you don't have an obligation to return it to him. There's no obligation to return to him when it's not a necessity for him. Right, Tan Rabbanan, ha'movet chavero, eino rashad ha'mashkeno. Person who lends money to his friend has no right to take a mashkon from him. Ve'enu chayav lachzir lo, and he doesn't have the obligation to return it to him. Vover b'chol shemot alalu, and then he's in violation of all these isurim. So obviously the question is, Mike Hummer, what is going on? The Brisa seems to, right, be a stira mineovid, right? It seems to contradict itself because first of all, it says you can't take a mashkon, and then it says you don't have to return it. Now you only have to return it if you have a mashkon, right? So obviously he could take a mashkon, or he did take a mashkon, and then it says he's in violation of all these yisurim. So we're gonna have two explanations, one from Rav Sheshet and one from Rava. So I'm Rav Sheshet, hachikamai. This is how you read it. Amalved chaviro ino ra'elu mashkono. Number one, when you lend money to a friend, you do not have the right, or when you lend money, you do not have a right to take a mashkon. That's the first statement. V'im mashkono, if he did go ahead and he was mimashkin him over here. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean that he was mimashkin him over here? So, chayav lachzir, we'll see in a second. Chayav lachzir lo. If he did take the mashkon, then he must return it to him. And if he does not return it to him, then he's in violation of all these yisurim, and that's going what he says, a seifa. That issue of the violation of the yisurim is on the seifa. If you do take a mashkon, you are obligated to return it to him, and if you are obligated to return it to him and you fail to do so, then you are, right, in violation of all these isurim. That's the way Rav Sheshet explains it. I mean, if you go ahead and take a mashkon, which you shouldn't have done, then, right, then you have to return it. And then you're in violation of the isurim if you don't return it. But it sounds from this that there is, and even though you shouldn't take the mashkon, it's not clear here that there's any violation by simply taking the mashkon. It's only if you don't return it that you're in violation, according to Rav Sheshet. Rav Amar Hachikamar, Hamavet Chavero, Eino Rashai Lamashkono. Person lends to his friend is not permitted to take a mashkon for him. V'im mashkono chayav lachzir lo. V'over b'cholosh matulal. Sorry, I skipped a line here. Sorry. Rav Amar Hachikamar Malvet Chaveru Eino Rashai Lamashkono. V'im mashkono chayav lachzir lo. B'med v'im amurim shemashkono shelo b'shat halvato. That's when he does it at not the time of the halva. Av mashkono b'shat halvato Eino chayav lachzir lo. He takes the mashkon at the time that he gave out the halva, then he's not required to return it to him. Vover b'chol shemot olalu areisha. That's going on the first part of the Mishnah or the Braisa over here. So that's the, according to Rav Sheshet, the violation of the surim is only if you don't return the mashkon. Whereas Rova says that the violation of the sur is the fact that you actually took the mashkon shlo b'shat halva and did not give it back to him, then you are over on the surim. So it's part of taking this mashkon shelo b'shatavato is what causes the problem. You are, if you do it shelo b'shatavato, first of all, you're not allowed to take it. And if you take it and don't return it, then you're in violation of the isur. So as opposed to Rav Sheshet, who believes you're not supposed to take a mashkon at all. And, right, if you do take a mashkon and do not return it, you're always in violation. Rav, splits the halacha and says it depends on what type of mashkon you're talking about. If you're talking about mashkon b'shat halva'ah, no problem. No problem to take the mashkon, no obligation to return it. On the other hand, if you take a mashkon shelo b'shat halva'ato, then he's like Rav Sheshet. You shouldn't take it. If you do take it, you must return it. If you don't return it, then you're in violation of all these isurim. So Tani Rav Shizvi Kamedero. It's somewhat along your lines. Rashi learns the actual difference between them has to do with the word chavol. The isur is by chavol, lo tachbol, right? And chavol is to take from the person, not that they brought it to you. So somewhat along the lines of what you're saying, Shaul, which is that when he gives it in the beginning of the loan, he's really giving it as a security deposit at the beginning of the loan, and he's giving it willingly. When he gives it willingly, then there is no violation of the isur, and there's no problem. Whereas if he... Right, it comes vishlobas shat halvato, then it's chavol. You're taking it against his will. And if you're taking it against the will, that's what the pasuk is speaking about, a case of chavol, right, or chavol. So that's the difference. And I think along the lines of what you're saying, I mean, the logic behind why that is exactly what you're saying. That at the beginning of a loan, it's really a security deposit, or it's the premise on which the loan is being given, versus later on where it's trying to enforce or trying to create a collection or pressure a collection, which is a different scenario. Okay, so now Tana Rav Shizvi Kamei D'Rava Ad Bo Hashemesh Tishivenu Lo Zuk Sut Laila. Right, so it says that you have to return it to him, right, for the daytime until the sun sets. He says that is the night clothing. Hashiv tishi below at avot kivua shemesh. You have to return it to him, right, when the sun, right, goes down. Zuk sutyom. That is the ksutyom, daytime clothing. So obviously it's bad. It doesn't seem to make any sense. During the day, you must give him back his night clothing until the sun sets. And then when the sun sets, you should give him back his day clothing. Now, what is he going to do, right, which is what the Gemara is going to say, Amrle diyomama balalelia lomali, right? What does he need his ksut yom during the night for? And what does he need his ksut laila for during the day? It seems totally backwards. So Amrle Yisimi, he says, all right, you know what? I'll throw it out. This price seems to be wrong. What I learned is wrong. It's incorrect. Let me erase it from my memory bank over here. So Amrle lo. He says, Rabbi says, no, you don't have to erase this price. So, why? Hachi kamar. This is how you read it. Ad bo shemesh tishivenu lo. Right, what does it mean, ad bo shemesh tishivenu lo? So we said that was ksut laila, meaning that he has to return it to him during the day until the sun sets. That didn't seem to make any sense. So what is, how do we explain it? Zu ksut yom. This is the ksut yom shenitna lechbo balaila. That is permissible to take it at night. Meaning that you return his day clothing to him, right, until the sun sets. But this is the clothing. Why is it called ksut laila? Not that it is ksut laila, but rather it's ksut yom that one is permitted to take as a mashkon bilaila at night. Hashiv tashivilo et avot kavu hashemesh. You have to return his clothing to him when the sun sets. So over there it said it was his day clothing, but not his day clothing. Rather, zuk ksut laila. It's his night clothing. He must have pajamas. You have to return to him at night. Shenit nalach bo bayom, because they are permissible to take during the day, meaning that they are the avot of the mashkon during the day. So rather than reading as ksut yom and ksut yalayla, right, rather over here we're explaining, Rav is explaining to him, no, it means this is the mashkon that's taken during the day or the mashkon that is taken during the night. It happens to be a ksut yom or ksut layla, right, depending on the time period you're giving it to him, but the mashkon is the opposite, because whatever you have to return it to him, it's a mashkon in the opposite period of time. So if it's ksut yom, you have to return it to him during the day, that means it's a mashkon at night. And if it's ksut layla, if it's his pajamas, then, right, you can have to give him back at night to use, but it's your mashkon during the day. Right, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Mashkonu umet, if he takes it as a mashkon and then dies, not the malveh, but the loveh dies, right, shumtomi al gabi banav, he can go rip the mashkon, maybe of his clothing or shirt, he can go rip it off his children and take it. So generally we have a din, which is by a bal chov, right, a bal chov is only allowed to collect karka, stuff that was mishubat to him, right, from the possessions of the loveh, but he's not permitted to take metaltalin from the yitomim. He's not allowed to take metaltalin from the estate of the loveh. So why is it over here we allowed him to go and take metaltalin? These are clearly metaltalin. They're being worn by his children, and they're metaltalin. Why do we allow him to go in and take it? The answer is because, I mean, you can see this in different extremes, but basically the mashkon, once it's taken by the individual, becomes his. It's his mashkon. And when he gives it back, he's giving it back as a pikadon. And it's really, he has a kinyan on this object. It is his object. The mashkon is really his. When the mashkon is really his, then we don't say, oh, you're taking it away from the yitomim, the metaltalin not mishubat. They're already mishubat because it's his. It's his item. He can go back and take it whenever he wants. Meitve. I'm a Rabbi Meir. So I have a question on this position. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Meir says, V'chim acher shemashkanin, lama machzirim. If we take a mashkon, why do we return it? The Gemara says, Lama machzirin? Rachman amar hader. What's the question? What do you mean, why do we return it? We return it because the Torah says you have to return it. I mean, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Ella, you have to say this is the question. Machar shemachzirin, lama chuzrin mamashkanim. Fine, we take the mashkon the first time. But after we take it the first time and you return it, why do you bother to go in each day to take it back again? So Mar says, Shlo tehei shvi'it misham tato, v'yaseh metaltalim etzel banav. I'll tell you why you keep going to take it back. Number one is so that the shvi'it is not mishametet, because we know, we said before that a milveh, ala mashkon, is not subject to shmita ksafim, because there is no need then to lo igos. Right, you're not going to force him to be. You already, it's as if it's guver, right? It's nigver, right? It's as if you took the payment already. So that is by Shvi'it, and by his children. Again, we just said that it already has a kinyan on it, because if he keeps taking it back, it's clear that it's his, and he's just lending it to the loveh. So now, Tama dahader umashkene. That's only because he went back and took it as mashkon. Halo hader umashkene lo. But if he didn't go back and take it as mashkon, it would not work. So that goes against Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan sounds like mashkene umet shomto me'al gabei banav. If he took it as a mashkon once, returned it to him, right, then, and he dies, he can rip it off his kid's back. And over here, it sounds like unless he keeps on taking the mashkon, then it doesn't work. So, Amar Rav Adar Bar Mata, V'lav Tirutzei Kamataritz La, I said, didn't I already answer this for you? Taritz Hochi, read it this way. V'achar Shemachzirin Lame Mashkenim Mi'ikara. Meaning that if we're going to give it back in the end anyway, why bother to take mashkon? What's the point of taking a mashkon if you're just going to return it anyway? Shelo tehei shavit misham tato ve'lo yaseh metaltlin etzel banav. I'll tell you why we do it. We take the mashkon because if you don't ever take the mashkon, then your milveh will be in trouble when it comes to Shemitah, and it'll be in trouble if he ever passes away and if the estate falls to the Yitomim, you won't be able to get your money. So the reason we take a mashkon up front, even though we're going to have to return it, is because once it's in your kinyan, once you have a kinyan on it, once you've taken possession of the item, it changes the status of the item for you, and therefore it'll protect you in terms of the shvi'it, and it'll protect you in terms of his yutomim, or the inheritors of the loveh, preventing you from getting your hands on these metaltlim, because it really is yours. The Tosfos asks an obvious question. What do you mean? What's the question? Why do we take a mashkon? I mean, why is the Gemara over here so worried about why do we take a mashkon mikara? Even why do you say, why do you take a mashkon? Even when you turn, you take a mashkon again. Why does anybody take a mashkon? Most people don't take a mashkon to protect from Shemitah Ksafim by Pesachim or to protect against the possible death of the Loveh. That's not why a person takes a mashkon. The reason it takes a mashkon is, number one, so that the Loveh can't be kofer. Right? When he can't say there was never such a loan. Right? I don't have to pay you. And number two is that he'll pay faster. I mean, that he's going to be embarrassed by the fact that you're going in every day. He has to deal with you all the time and he's staying in the mashkon. It'll be an impetus for him to pay down the loan. So the truth is the mashkon serves a purpose that has nothing to do with the halachic ramifications. It's simply a vehicle for ensuring that the loan gets repaid and not denied. So Tosa says, ain't hachanami. That's true, but the Gemara had a better answer. And the better answer is what we got, that it had to do with Shvius and has to do with the Yitomim. In Ochanami, the Mashkon functions anyway. The reason we would take a Mashkon, even if you have to return it, is for these other reasons. But we have even better reasons. We have halachic reasons for him to take the Mashkon, even though he has to return it. Right? Not just practical reasons about the enforceability of the loan, but rather there are halachic implications for him taking a Mashkon. And therefore, it's worthwhile for him to take it because of those halachic implications. All right. We'll stop over here.